Welcome to Managing Uncertainty, a podcast series from the experts at BrightPath discussing global risk, business continuity, and crisis management. Will you be ready to lead your organization through its critical moment?
Welcome back to the Managing Uncertainty podcast. This is Brian Strauser, Principal and CEO at BrightPath. And I want to talk a little bit about some changes that we're going to make to the podcast starting with this episode. We have decided now to release two episodes each week, and they're going to have a little different focus. The first episode each week, the one that you're listening to right now, is going to be more of a news and current events focused discussion. We're going to look at somewhere between 3 and 5 things that are happening in the news or are planned to happen in the coming days that are relevant to your preparedness capabilities around the world. And so joining me for this discussion will be the rest of the BrightPath consulting team, Jennifer Otremba and Bray Wheeler. And I'm going to have Jen and Bray introduce themselves, and then we'll come back to me and talk a little bit about what this is going to look like. Jen?
Hi, I'm Jen Otremba. I'm a senior consultant here at BrightPath.
Hi, this is Bray Wheeler. I'm a consultant here at BrightPath.
Would each of you talk just a little bit about your backgrounds for a little bit?
Sure. So I started at BrightPath a few years ago now, but I took a little bit of a leave of absence. I'm also in the National Guard. I've got over 20 years experience with the military, and I've been gone for about almost a year, right, guys?
Yeah.
Over in the Middle East working.
I like how you said you kind of took a sabbatical, but it's not like this was by choice.
No, a little bit of a break from BrightPath for my other career path there. So before that, I was, I know that I've introduced myself before on the podcast, but as a reminder, I worked with Brian for quite a long time and Bray as well when we were all at Target together.
Mr. Wheeler?
Yeah, I've been with BrightPath just about a year now. So before that, I worked, like Jen mentioned, with Brian and Jen at Target, doing a lot of different stuff. So I'm brand new to the podcast. So my background is everything from crisis management in an operations center to enterprise crisis management to intelligence to corporate security. So I touched just about everything.
This is actually Bray's first episode on the podcast, despite almost a year of trying to get him to do a podcast.
So I show up and Bray's all in.
Yeah, exactly.
We gotta lighten the load a little bit. I gotta deflect it just a little bit. Take the pressure off.
Yeah.
So this change in our format came from a discussion that the three of us were having at the tail end of last week, but we've kind of been thinking about this for a while. I think there's a place in the market to have discussion about more current events as they happen without going into kind of the deep dive process discussion, which is what our typical episode has been. So we hope you find this valuable. I think we think this is going to be an interesting conversation.
Yeah. No, I think it brings a little bit something different than just kind of, to your point, deep diving into something. It's a little bit more of, hey, what just happened in the last week and what do we kind of expect?
A little bit of interpretation.
Yeah.
Yeah, what does that mean?
And plus, let's face it, we're all sitting around talking about what's going on in the world every day anyway, so we might as well talk about it with everyone.
That's right. And I think we may bring some things to the forefront that maybe you're not thinking about, and I know this is going to happen with one of the topics we're going to discuss today. Maybe it's something you should be thinking about because it will have future impact on what we do. So let's move right into the topics we have for today. The first one, which I'll kind of tee up the discussion, is from a Wall Street Journal article, the tail end of last week. And this is the announcement from the U.S. Department of Justice that Walmart has agreed to plead guilty and pay $282 million in a Foreign Corrupt Practices Act case involving facilitation payments that Walmart made in Brazil, China, India, and Mexico. This is at the tail end of a 6-year discussion and investigation that's gone on between Walmart and the United States government to get to this settlement. It requires Walmart to pay $144 million in ill-begotten gains to the Securities and Exchange Commission and $138 million FCPA penalty to the U.S. Justice Department. It's one of the largest cases, if not the largest cases ever. This investigation started, according to this article, in 2012, which had an investigation from the New York Times about payments that Walmart had made in Mexico in order to obtain permits to build stores there. And then it expanded to Brazil, China, and India. reactions?
I mean, I'm shaking my head. I just, from a business perspective, this is a huge deal, right? A crisis management. I can't imagine what they're doing in their ops center as this is starting to hit the news, you know?
There's certainly a reputational issue here that's, I mean, Walmart already has had over the years some challenges reputationally with its compliance with various aspects of law, but, you know, not necessarily recognized as a place where workers are treated fairly and, you know, a lot of various exploitation of communities and stuff that have been alleged along the way. And then here comes this massive bribery case.
Well, I think for Walmart too, the amount of money probably isn't the issue for them. It's the having the largest fine ever and the reputational fallout of it is, I mean, that's for companies, that's, that hurts more so than the fines, especially for a company the size of Walmart.
And what do you guys think as far as Walmart goes? Do you think it's going to have a huge reputational impact? I mean, do you think that Walmart shoppers care about this?
I don't.
Because I don't know that I do either. I think other companies, this would be a bigger hit, but I don't know that Walmart would be as affected.
Well, I think we were discussing this on Friday with one of our clients just on our regular status call that this had just, news had just come out. And I think that, and this is a company that operates internationally, particularly in Asia, and they're in India. And I think this, you know, I think it immediately kind of raised his heckle from the standpoint of, well, I wonder what we're going to do about this. Because obviously there was heightened intensity that led to kind of this issue. I mean, it's kind of interesting that if you get into the article, Walmart has spent $900 million investigating this over the last 7 years internally. That doesn't count the fine and the SEC payment. But at the core of the issue, in terms of what they've paid out, or what was alleged rather by the SEC and the DOJ, is that Walmart grew significantly in the 1990s and they didn't ramp up their systems to account for corruption risk. So there's kind of a systematic accusation here that they weren't prepared to deal with the possibility that this might happen.
Well, it's one of those, ignorance is not an excuse.
Yeah.
At that point where you can't just, you're so heavily focused on expanding the business that you're not accounting for those people you're hiring on the other end, the partners you have on the other end, just awareness to that process that it's not the same old environment you're used to.
And I guess I would argue what other large corporations are also not prepared for this type of thing that have had huge growth in a short period of time, just like Walmart.
A lot, probably.
A lot, right?
I would think.
Walmart's just the one that's hit the news and is getting caught right now.
Right.
And do you think that this is going to have a long effect on other corporations as this has come out?
I mean, I think the wake-up call here is probably around, as global expansion ramps up, your compliance capability needs to ramp up with it. I mean, we've worked with, we have other clients that have had some FCPA challenges related to bribery in foreign countries where the same thing happened. They grew rapidly. They spun up global operations, but they didn't spin up a compliance capability to make sure that folks were educated and that they were looking for these issues, right? I mean, that's really what the SEC is accusing Walmart of, is they didn't ramp up their capabilities as they grew so much internationally. And we've been through this.
Right.
Both as employees and as, you know, as a consulting firm. So I did find the Brazilian accusations kind of interesting because my when I was in business school, our international residency was in Brazil. One of the presentations that we were divided into groups after the 2-week trip to Brazil, and each of us had to talk, each of our groups had to get up and talk about a specific aspect of what we learned in Brazil. My team got tax, which was really not that interesting, but another team had business ethics and compliance, and the subject of their presentation was, when they got up, they put up a slide in Brazilian colors and it said, corruption in business ethics in Brazil. This shit is corrupt. And that was the presentation. Mind you, it was our last presentation before graduation, so we may have been a little punchy. We all heard this in different aspects of our own careers, that go to India, go to Brazil, go to Mexico, and facilitation payments, aka bribery, are the norm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they're part of business.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's part of the culture. That's what they're used to. And so if you go into those places relying on kind of the experts on the ground, they're going to go with what they know. And that's how they do business.
Right.
Right.
We had a criminal case in India once that we were dealing with in our prior life, where we attempted to get, you know, some prosecution on a case. And the local police commander was like, I also would really like a bike like that one, but we're filing a prosecution. Yeah, but I would like a bike like that bike, that motorbike, motorcycle. So needless to say, the person didn't get prosecuted. We didn't buy him a motorcycle. Or I'm sorry, Jen, what's our next topic?
Okay, so everyone's favorite discussion, the Middle East and Iran, is basically the update. Mm-hmm. And I think it's important to continue kind of keeping an eye on what's happening in the Middle East and specifically what's happening with Iran, because some of the latest things that have come out are, obviously we saw that a drone was shot down. Mm-hmm. Everyone's seen that on news now. We've seen how the United States has responded to that or not responded, depending on what your opinion is on what should be done or what shouldn't be done.
Or who you want to believe.
Yeah, and I've seen some discussions around cyber attacks. I've seen new sanctions that are going to be put in place for Iran. And then the reaction for what Iran's going to think about that or what their reaction's going to be towards the United States and through not just the United States, but other coalition forces around the world.
Mm-hmm. So two things have happened, right? There was a tanker attack. Now, 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
Multiple tankers.
Yeah, two tankers. There's some dispute about exactly what happened and who's behind it. But the attack was limpet mines, which are magnetic mines that are usually placed by a diver. It's the Navy SEAL's preferred way to sabotage a ship. But one of the ship's crew on one of the tankers said they saw a torpedo, so maybe it wasn't a limpet mine. There's dispute, debate. I don't know, disinformation.
Even reports that crew members were reporting a shell. Somebody actually fired over the waterline.
Like artillery, like, not artillery, but ship. Like a ship, yeah. Ship to ship. Yeah. Fascinating.
Yep. Yeah, it is.
Lots of accounts.
Yeah.
And the U.S. mm-hmm. State Department has said it was Iran that was behind it, but other countries are disputing this.
Of course.
I believe.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, so we have that. That's 2 weeks ago. That ramps up some tension. And then last week, what happens? They get the drone shot down.
Yep.
And Iran claims it was over their territorial water. We said it was in international airspace. I'm sorry, it was in international airspace. They claim it was in their airspace.
That's common, though, right? The argument of where it was exactly when it was shot down. Was it legal to shoot it down, or was it an act of war, really?
Right.
Well, that's not an uncommon conversation, to your point. I mean,
no.
Russia and the U.S. do that all the time.
All
on
the time.
Whether or not we're in each other's airspace or not.
Yes.
So.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
So, and then there was, apparently we were going to attack Iran, retaliate by hitting some missile capabilities, or I guess it's not really clear what we were allegedly going after.
Right.
And then if you follow the common narrative, the president canceled the attack 10 minutes before it was supposed to go off. But he disputes that. The New York Times and Washington Post have a TikTok story from the weekend about kind of the play-by-play of what happened. But again, it's tough to know who to believe when there's multiple versions of what's going on.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm sure there's some truth somewhere in between, but we're not going to have all of the information.
Right.
And we're not going to have all the information that the executive branch has in front of them either, as we're kind of making our opinions on the topic. But I think that this will be interesting to continue to watch mm-hmm. and to see how this is going to affect really all of us in the United States. But for me, it hits really close to home, understanding I still have friends right now working and operating in the Middle East, so I have a lot of concerns with mm-hmm. how this is all going to play out.
So the FAA has banned overflight of Iran for international flights involving American-flagged aircraft. It won't stop the Europeans and others from doing so, but it will apply to U.S. carriers anyway. Certainly American companies don't really operate in Iran because of decades-old sanctions, but we're everywhere else. I mean, Dubai is one of the world's big financial centers. It's right across the Strait of Hormuz from where all of this was going on. And that's a common travel hub for folks going to Asia or elsewhere in the Middle East, to be fair. I mean, Emirates has pretty significant service from the U.S. to there and then on to other locales like India. There's a lot of risk in disrupting the market. I think there's less issue with oil disruption because of the growth in U.S. oil production over the last decade in North Dakota and elsewhere, but there's still a lot of risk to the global economy that comes into play here.
Well, and it's obviously a very volatile situation. So mm-hmm. we're having this conversation of what airspace is what. And we shot your passenger airplane down because it was in our airspace.
Right.
Was it? Well, you know, I mean, that's pretty scary.
Well, I think to the oil price discussion, too, a lot of times historically, if we would have, this would have been 10 years ago, oil prices, global oil prices have shot up. Nobody's really seeing that at the pump in the U.S.
right
now,
right?
Because we've kind of buffered ourselves a little bit.
Right.
But I think from just the global economy piece, and then somebody did a breakdown, one of the talking heads on one of the cable networks kind of broke down kind of the impacts of if it went to full-scale escalation and how pretty much the U.S. and its allies pretty much could beat Iran pretty easily based on just U.S.'s power. But they did in kind of an interesting take on kind of playing out how if Iran was to really succeed in this, they would rely on their proxies, and that those proxies then carry into Saudi Arabia, they carry into UAE, they carry into Afghanistan,
Lebanon.
Iraq, Lebanon into Israel, the Straits, you know, mm-hmm. Hormuz. Like they're pretty much going to disrupt that entire region just using their proxy network mm-hmm. at pretty much on one order.
And that's been their game plan for the last four decades since the revolution, has been to engage in a proxy campaign against the United States and Western allies through the ways that you just described. Direct military action has rarely been their forte, or has been, I shouldn't say forte, has been their approach against the United States.
Yeah, because I think it's...
For a reason.
Well, right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it's the only way.
Why fight the Leviathan head on if you can use proxies to do that?
Yeah, absolutely.
But I think it's interesting from just the, from kind of that business mindset, it's not just U.S.-Iran or Iran-Iraq kind of tensions and all this won't have anything, or maybe it's just oil or the commodities coming through the strait. It's if you're doing business anywhere in the Middle East for any reason, you're at risk and should be thinking about that proxy fight and mm-hmm. that ability for those governments and those institutions to hold up against some of that without cracking down or having to pick a side or a lot of other.
Right.
And not just economy for the United States, but really this is a world economy issue.
Mm-hmm. So definitely an area that businesses should be monitoring mm-hmm. and looking, I think, for multiple sources of truth about what's going on, because there's certainly a dispute here about what has happened. And of course, both countries will have their own version of what's going on. So I think look for multiple sources of truth from the news and get a holistic perspective of what's going on.
Right.
Bray, you want to take us to our last current event of the,
yeah.
of the episode?
So this is a little bit of one to watch because it's a little bit kind of new breaking story, but it's out of Turkey. So over the last 4 or 5 months, for sure, there's been some discrepancy in the mayor's race in Istanbul. President Erdogan of Turkey, his kind of chosen candidate, lost in the election in March. And so he called for a recount, which was highly controversial. Mm-hmm. And then they just did the recount, or they just did a revote, and his candidate lost even worse. So now he's having to deal with the fallout of kind of the economic pressure that he's facing in his country, but then also his political pressure that's now amping up because Istanbul is his home turf. His party's controlled it for pretty much like the last 25 years or something. And so now he's having to face kind of this increased pressure against his administration and against his kind of administrative policies.
The Wall Street Journal has a pretty good dive into this from a few days ago. Well, I guess from yesterday, now that I look at the article. And there's question about, I mean, historically, the president of Turkey has gotten what he wants,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean, there's been, he might get challenged, but usually the various government agencies line up behind what he wants, even though these elections are supposed to be independent and not are being, you know, not impacting on a national level. Will he accept the mayoral results? And if he does, what political powers and authorities will he allow the mayor of Istanbul to keep compared to stripping them?
One, particularly him getting what he wants. That's kind of has been his MO, is he's gotten what he wants.
Mm-hmm. To your point, for 25 years.
For over 25 years.
Yeah.
He's gotten what he wanted. And now he's facing some real serious challenges to his ability to control that power.
And it should point out, I mean, his margin of victory in this second race here was 54 to 45. It wasn't close.
No.
At all.
No. That's out, way outside the margin of error.
Right. Yeah.
Even for
what happens there.
Not non-U.S. countries. Who probably don't poll as much as we do. But I think from kind of that impact and kind of why we're kind of highlighting that and something to watch is Turkey's kind of a pretty good bellwether in terms of just stability and kind of the source of truth on the ground for how everything's feeling, both from that connection to Europe and the Middle East. And so if there's some grumbling there, that typically kind of there's some fallout politically anyway, kind of across that region, it makes everybody a little bit more uncertain as that kind of goes along. And Turkey's also, you know, kind of a player for a lot of different U.S.-based companies, global companies, just its proximity and its geography and its capabilities as a country. It's definitely something to watch and keep aware of as this kind of plays out, because they're not afraid to protest either there. And so they're not afraid to have this amp up a little bit.
Should point out that the current president, who's been president for 25 years and will be president until at least 2023, he got into this office having previously been the mayor of Istanbul. That was his launching pad to the presidency and a national scale race. Yet now he's saying that the mayor is just like a piece of shop window decoration. That was his statement yesterday.
Well, I mean, of course he is.
Yeah, he's minimizing the role of the mayor of Istanbul.
Absolutely, yeah.
He did congratulate him on Twitter, though.
Well, that's generous. While he may undercut him.
Yeah.
From a business standpoint, lots of American businesses, lots of global businesses operate in Istanbul. I mean, our previous employer did. We dealt with a number of issues in Istanbul that went on over the years, mostly related to protests and disruption. Never really, can't think of any incidents involving violence or.
No, there was some terrorism stuff as some years back, kind of as Syria was really ramping up and kind of some of those connections, but.
Well, we certainly have extensive experience dealing with world protests and what happens to corporations in those events.
So Turkey, we view that this is one we need to watch. This is the long-term piece here to watch, because at some point there's going to be some kind of transition, right? I mean, the current president isn't going to live or serve for forever.
No.
And definitely he's facing some pretty tough challenges with his economy and things like that too, that this is the most pressure, kind of non-violence, non-full-out protest pressure that he's felt, that really throughout the country people are feeling a little bit uncertain as to the direction he's taking them in. And so he's going to have to make some choices.
Headwinds are significant.
Yes.
Yes, they are.
Yeah. Well, that's it for this newsy edition of the Managing Uncertainty podcast. Catch our other episode in a few days where we'll be talking more in depth about protest movement in Hong Kong and what that means for global and U.S. businesses that are operating in Hong Kong and what those long-term impacts might be. Look forward to having you on the next episode. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Managing Uncertainty, produced by the experts at BrightPath. To receive notifications of new episodes, join our newsletter at brightpath.com or subscribe to your favorite podcast player, such as iTunes or Google Play. Learn more about the services and trusted advice from BrightPath by visiting brightpath.com. That's BrightPath.com.